Chapter 3, The Cause of a Delay in the Falling of the Karnak. Soon afterward, the captain entered, and having greeted Beelzebub with all the ceremonies appropriate to one of his rank, said, "Your right reverence, allow me to ask your authoritative advice. An inevitability lies directly in the line of our course and will hinder our falling by the shortest route. The point is that if we follow our intended course, in 2 kilprenos, our ship will be passing through the solar system Voinic." Kilprino, in the language of Beelzebub, means a certain period of time of approximately the same duration as what is called an hour on the Earth. "But at the very place where our ship must pass, there will also pass, about 1 kilpreno before, the great comet belonging to that solar system and named Sakur, or as it is sometimes called, the Madcap. So, if we keep to our proposed course, we must inevitably cross the space through which this comet will have passed. And your right reverence certainly knows this comet always leaves a great deal of Zilnitrago in its track, which, on entering the planetary body of a being, disorganizes most of its functions until it has all been volatilized. Zilnitrago is the name of a gas similar to what is called on the Earth cyanic acid." "I thought at first," continued the captain, "of avoiding the Zilnitrago by steering the ship around this zone, but this would mean a long detour and would greatly prolong our voyage. And on the other hand, to wait somewhere until the Zilnitrago is dispersed would take still longer. Faced with these alternatives, I cannot decide on my own what to do. So I am venturing to trouble your right reverence for the benefit of your wise advice." When the captain had finished speaking, Beelzebub thought a moment and then answered, "Really, I do not know how to advise you, my dear captain." "Ah, yes. In that solar system where I existed for a long time, there is a planet named Earth, on which there arose, and still continue to arise, very strange three-centered beings. And among them, on one of the continents of that planet, called Asia, there arose a very wise three-brained being named Mullah Nasr-ed-Din. For each and every peculiar situation, great and small, in the existence of the beings there," Beelzebub continued, "this terrestrial sage, Mullah Nasr-ed-Din, had an apt and pithy saying. As all his sayings were full of the sense of truth for the beings of that planet, I too always used them as a guide, for the sake of having a comfortable existence there. In the present situation, also, my dear captain, I wish to profit by one of his wise sayings. In such a quandary as ours, he would probably say, 'You can't jump over your knees, and it's absurd to try to kiss your own elbow. I now say the same to you, and add, there is nothing to be done. When faced with an event arising from forces immeasurably greater than your own, we must submit. The only question is, which of the alternatives you mentioned should be chosen, that is, to wait or add to our journey by a detour. You say that a detour would greatly lengthen our journey, but that waiting would take still longer. Well, then, my dear captain, suppose that by making the detour, we should save a little time. What do you think? Is the wear and tear on our ship's machinery worthwhile for the sake of ending our journey a little sooner? If a detour would involve even the slightest damage to our ship, then, in my opinion, we ought to give preference to your second suggestion and stop somewhere until the path is cleared of the noxious Zilnitrago. That would at least spare our ship useless damage. And we will try to fill the time of this unforeseen delay with something useful for us all. For example, it would give me personally great pleasure to talk with you about contemporary ships in general, and our ship in particular. A great many inventions that I still know nothing about have been made in this field during my absence from these parts. In my time, for instance, these big transpace ships were so complicated and cumbersome that it took almost half of their power to carry the materials needed to elaborate the energy for their locomotion. But contemporary ships, in their simplicity and the freedom they offer for all being manifestations, are pure bliss stokirno. At times you even forget that you're not on one of the planets. So I should very much like to know how this marvel was brought about and how the contemporary ships work. Now go, my dear captain, and make all the arrangements for this necessary stop. Then, when you're quite free, come back, and we will pass the time of our unavoidable delay in conversation useful for us all. When the captain had gone, Hassine suddenly sprang to his feet and began to dance and clap his hands, shouting, "Ah, oh, I'm so glad, glad, glad about this." Beelzebub looked with affection on these joyful manifestations of his favorite, but old Ahun could not restrain himself, and shaking his head reproachfully, muttered, half to himself, that the boy was a growing egoist. Hearing what Ahun had called him, Hassin stopped in front of him, and with a mischievous glance said, "Don't be angry with me, dear Ahun. The reason for my joy is not egoism, but only this happy coincidence. You heard him, didn't you? My beloved grandfather didn't only decide to make a stop, but also promised the captain to talk with him. And you know very well that my grandfather's talks always lead to stories of places where he's been, and you know how wonderfully he tells his stories, and how much new and interesting information is crystallized in our presence through these tales. Where is the egoism? Hasn't he, of his own free will, after weighing with his wise reason all the circumstances of this unforeseen event, decided to make a stop, which evidently doesn't upset his plans too much? It seems to me that my dear grandfather has no reason to hurry. Everything he needs for his rest and comfort is here on the Karnak, and here also are many who love him and whom he loves. Didn't he just say that we must not oppose forces higher than our own? Adding that not only should we not oppose them, but should even submit to them and accept all their results with reverence, at the same time praising and glorifying the marvelous and providential works of our Lord Creator. I'm glad, not because of the mishap, but because this unforeseen event from above enables us to listen once more to the tales of my dear grandfather. Is it my fault that the circumstances have turned out to be so desirable and happy for me? No, dear Ahun, you shouldn't scold me, but should even join me in expressing gratitude to the source of all beneficent results." All this time, Beelzebub had been listening attentively and with a smile to the chatter of his favorite. And when Hassin had finished, said, "You are right, dear Hassin, and for being right, even before the captain returns, I shall tell you anything you like." Upon hearing this, the boy at once ran and sat at Beelzebub's feet, and after thinking a little, said, "Dear grandfather, you have already told me so much about the solar system where you spent so many years that by now I could probably go on by my own logic to describe in detail the nature of that peculiar corner of our universe. But I'm curious to know whether three-brained beings dwell on the planet of that solar system and whether higher being bodies are coded in them. This is what I should like you to tell me about, said Hassin, looking up affectionately at his grandfather. Yes, replied Beelzebub, three brain beings dwell on almost all planets of that solar system also, and higher being bodies can be coded in almost all of them. Higher being bodies, or as they are called on some planets of that solar system, souls, are coded in three brain beings inhabiting all the planets, except those before reaching which the emanations of our most holy Son Absolute, through repeated deflections, have gradually lost the fullness of their strength and no longer contain the vivifying power needed for coating higher being bodies. Of course, my boy, on each planet of that solar system, the planetary bodies of the three brain beings are coated and take on an exterior form corresponding to the nature of that planet, adapting to it in every detail. On the planet Mars, for instance, where we were exiled, the three brain beings are coated with a planetary body having a form, how shall I tell you, like a karuna. That is to say, they have a long, broad trunk, amply provided with fat, and a head with enormous protruding and shining eyes. On the back of this huge planetary body of theirs are two large wings, and on the underside, two comparatively small feet with very strong claws. Almost the entire strength of this huge planetary body is adapted by nature to generate energy for their eyes and their wings. As a result, the three-brained beings breeding on that planet can see freely everywhere, however great the darkness, and can move about not only on the planet, but also in its atmosphere, and occasionally, some of them even manage to travel beyond its limits. On another planet, not far from the planet Mars, owing to the intense cold there, the three brain beings are covered with thick, soft wool. The outer form of these three-centered beings is that of a tusuk. That is, it resembles a kind of double sphere, the upper sphere serving to contain the principal organs of the planetary body, and the lower one, the organs for the transformation of the first and second being foods. In the upper sphere are three apertures opening outward. Two serve for sight, and the third for hearing. The lower sphere has only two apertures, one in front for the taking in of the first and second being foods, and the other at the back for the elimination of residues from the organism. To the lower spheres are attached two strong, sinewy feet, and on each of these is a protuberance that serves the same purpose as our fingers. There is still another planet in that solar system, my dear boy, quite a small one, bearing the name Moon. During its movements, this peculiar little planet often came very near to our planet Mars, and sometimes, for a whole kilprenos, I took great pleasure in observing, through the Tescuano, or telescope, in my observatory, the process of existence of the three-brained beings who inhabit it. Though the beings of this planet have very frail planetary bodies, they have an indomitable spirit, which gives them an extraordinary perseverance and capacity for work. Their external form is like that of large ants, and like them, they are always bustling about, working both on and within their planet. The result of their ceaseless activity are already plainly visible. I once happened to notice that in two of our years they had tunneled the whole of their planet. They were obliged to undertake this task on account of the abnormal climatic conditions caused by the fact that this planet arose unexpectedly, and that therefore the regulation of its climatic harmony had not been prearranged by the higher powers. The climate of this planet is truly mad, and in its variability could give points to the most high-strung, hysterical women existing on another planet of that solar system, which I shall also tell you about. Sometimes the cold is so intense on this moon that everything is frozen through and through, and it becomes impossible for beings to breathe in the open atmosphere. And then suddenly it gets so hot that you could fry an egg in a jiffy. These are only two short periods on that peculiar little planet, namely before and after it completes its orbit around a neighboring planet, when the weather is so glorious that for several rotations the whole planet is in bloom and yields the various products, for the first being food of its inhabitants, even greatly in excess of what they need for existence in that strange intraplanetary kingdom they have devised, where they are sheltered from the vagaries of this mad climate and all the inharmonious changes in the state of the atmosphere. Not far from that small planet is another, a larger planet, which occasionally comes quite close to Mars and is called Earth. The moon is actually a fragment of this Earth, which must now constantly maintain the moon's existence. On the planet Earth, also, three brain beings are formed, and they, too, contain all the data for higher being bodies to be coded in them. But in strength of spirit, they do not begin to compare with the beings breeding on the little planet I just mentioned. The external coding of the three brain beings of that planet Earth closely resemble our own, except that their skin is a little slimier than ours. Moreover, they have no tails, and their heads are without horns. It's true that for protection against external influences, they have invented what they call boots, but this invention does not do them much good. Aside from the imperfection of their external form, their reason is uniquely and utterly bizarre. Their being reason, owing to many causes that I may tell you about sometime, has gradually degenerated and, at present, is very, very strange and peculiar in the highest degree. Beelzebub was about to say more, but just then the captain of the ship entered. So, promising the boy to tell him about the beings of the planet Earth some other time, he began to talk with the captain. He asked the captain first to tell him who he was, how long he had been a captain, how he liked his work, and then to give him some information about contemporary cosmic ships. "Your right reverence," the captain began. "When I approached the age of a responsible being, I was destined by my father for this career in the service of our endless creator. Starting in the lowest ranks on the trans-space ships, I ultimately became worthy to perform the duties of captain, and for 8 years now I have been a captain on long-distance ships. In this latest post of mine on the Karnak, I succeeded my father, who had performed the duties of captain almost from the very beginning of world creation, and who, after his long years of blameless service to his endlessness, was held worthy of promotion to the post of governor of the solar system Kalman. In short," continued the captain, "I began my service just when your right reverence was leaving for the place of your exile. I was then only a sweeper on the long-distance ships of that period. Yes, a long, long time has passed by. Everything has changed and has been changed since then. Only our Lord and Sovereign remains unchanged. May the blessings of Avenzano be on his changelessness throughout eternity. Your Right Reverence has seen fit to remark very justly that the earlier ships were most inconvenient and cumbersome. They were, indeed, very complicated and unwieldy. I remember them well myself. There is a vast difference between the ships of that time and now. In our youth, all the ships, both for intersystem and interplanetary communication, were still run on the cosmic substance LL Kilmodaxazen, which is composed of two distinct parts of the omnipresent Okidanok, and it was to produce this substance that the earlier ships had to carry such a quantity of materials. But these ships did not remain long in use after our departure. They were replaced by ships of the system of Saint Venema,